Spoilers for all published books of George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire and all televised episodes of HBO's Game of Thrones.
Atcha patch.
Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
Welcome to the princes that were promised. It's me, it's Shawnee Wan, and with me, as always, it's John. Talking Robert's Rebellion. As we left it, Aerys Targaryen, second of his name, sent forth a raven to the Vale of Arryn, to the Eyrie, asking Jon Arryn to send him back the heads of Eddard Stark and Robert Baratheon. A bad idea to make a request like this. Aerys must have assumed that Ned would be coming for revenge and Robert would be coming for revenge as well. Once Jon Arryn refuses this request by his king and raises his own banners, that's the moment that Robert's Rebellion starts. What I want to touch on first is the duality of this event. This war doesn't last that long. It lasts close to a year, not even a year.
Right. It's not like it was World War I and World War II, where it was like 3-4-5 year battle, you know, very quick. There were no dragons. There was no like super weapon on the side to consider. It was really just man versus man type of battle. Right. It really was a quick.
And the sides, they were pretty even. You'd have to assume that the loyalists have the advantage at first, but that really doesn't make much of a difference in the long run. And you and I were talking off air how it's quite possible the only reason that the crown, the Targaryens, the loyalists lose this war is because of not even miscommunication, but lack of communication. But I would think on the flip side, with the rebels, they're going by the seat of their pants also. Neither side really planned for this war. The extent of planning for this conflict died with Rickard Stark and what he was trying to accomplish in a sort of alliance that would have a strong say in how the realm was run, no matter who was the king. But to that extent, that's it. There's no other preparation whatsoever for this rebellion. It was an act of Rhaegar Targaryen and Lyanna Stark running off together that set off other chain events in quick succession. Boom, 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 boom. And suddenly the realm is at war. And suddenly House Targaryen has fallen. And suddenly we have a new king. And it's a new era for Westeros. The end result of the war is the fall of House Targaryen, the Targaryen dynasty. Over the Seven Kingdoms.
Dynasty.
Fall of the Targaryen dynasty. The beginning of the reign of Robert Baratheon. But speaking to the duality of this war, you can call it Robert's Rebellion, which is what Robert calls it and what Ned calls it, and really what the realm calls it after the rebellion. Loyalists are probably more likely to call it
the War of the Usurper.
Right.
There's still some people in the realm that call me Usurper.
It's a lot. It's probably a lot. At least half, you know? I mean, they may grudgingly accept that you're king, but as far as they're concerned, you usurp the throne. You want it by conquest. I thought of that, Robert's Rebellion versus the War of the Usurper, and I thought of our friend, Tom Zarek.
History is told by the ones who live. In this case, it's like history is told by like who you believed and what side you thought was right.
Had Rhaegar gotten to the Trident earlier, or had Rhaegar beaten Robert on the Trident, it would have been called the War of the Usurper. It wouldn't have had that romantic, heroic name to it, Robert's Rebellion against the evil Targaryens.
At the end of this one, I want to talk about some what-ifs. I want to go to the what-ifs right now. More point is to talk about. We'll go to the what-ifs afterwards. But I really just think, when we were talking off air, I think the major thing about this is that Aerys just did not take this serious.
No.
And if they did take it serious, there's a lot of points in this where they could have ended it even before it got to the Trident.
Yes.
When Ned goes up north, Robert's going down south in the sea. He's kind of passing King's Landing. Come on, you can't tell me that no one knew that, like, Robert was coming down south. You got the spider in there, you got Varys in there. I mean, people know when someone farts.
Right.
And you don't know that one of the main guys you just call for their head is coming down south. And you know where he lives. It's like King's Landing's right there. You know this south of King's Landing is Storm's End. Not even to even acknowledge that Robert's going down south, you would think that once Jon Arryn puts out that
you're not getting these heads that you're asking for,
wouldn't you strategically, you're King's Landing, if you're the king, if you're Aerys Targaryen, I would attack Storm's End right there and then.
Which they end up doing. They end up besieging Storm's End.
Right, but it's way, not in time. It's not he attacks that. Storm's End like right away. He gets down there before Robert can get there. Mm-hmm. He gets down there. He's got Tyrells. He's got the Tarleys coming in there. Mm-hmm. Robert's at the sea now. Where's Robert going to go? Now you trap off Robert. Done right there.
No Robert, no war.
Well, they're not running their war, but there's no way Ned can really win that fight then. Because then it's really going to be Ned's war because Robert is going to be killed or...
Well, he probably wouldn't have Ned.
He's not going to be able to win that coming down and taking up all those people.
Right. Although it is Ned that does most of the grunt work.
Or the dirty work. He does a lot of the dirty work.
No, Ned, there's no win. It's really the combination of three men, Jon Arryn included. No, Jon Arryn, there's no war at all. It's just over and done with. There's so many what-ifs. Like with every war. When we went through the War of the Five Kings, all of the what-ifs and the scenarios where just in the nick of time, somebody gets word to Tywin, or just in the nick of time, this person in a certain spot.
Just at the War of the Five Kings.
Yeah. I guess a trademark of Martin's writing is that there is no fate or destiny. Essentially, it's all random events. And that's what steers the outcome of something like a gigantic war. And it's true with Robert's Rebellion. It's true with the War of the Five Kings. Before we get into the actual events of the war, from Jon Arryn raising his banners in revolt, I thought we should go through the main characters, the main movers and shakers of this rebellion. Starting with Jon Arryn, when he gets this letter. He's an old man. Maybe he doesn't want to go to war. Maybe he just wants to die peacefully in the Vale. And the only thing stopping him from doing that is sending Arryn the head of Ned and Robert. He'd be a cold man if he did something like that. But there is...
His integrity
and his relationship with these two boys. His heir was Albert Arryn, and that was his nephew. And he was killed alongside Brandon Stark. He rode with Brandon Stark to King's Landing, and he was one of the young heirs killed at King's Landing.
And I'm sure, like, with also with Jon Arryn, too, it's not only his love for the two guys, you know, with the two, I can't even call them kids, or I mean, at this point,
they're young adults, I guess.
Young adults. Point, it's also in for Rickard Stark's sake.
Right.
Out of his, and what you just did, Rickard. It's on now.
Arryn makes some big mistakes on the offset of this war that starts the war. And if he had done these things different, and we'll get to that, we'll get to Arryn, but had he done a couple things differently, or maybe approached it from a different angle, maybe he would have had more success. But to straight up murder Rickard Stark, using Brandon's stupidity against him, in a roundabout way, murder Brandon, and then demanding the heads of your two wards, you're not going to get any positive results out of that. And I think
he was just hoping for a power play. If he does it, he does it.
Yeah. He was thinking like the cruel Targaryen kings of past, where you have somebody
fire,
who rises up against
and,
you anyway.
Fire and blood.
Fire and blood. Right.
Fire and blood. It's fire and blood. So the Vale's
as high as honor.
As high as honor.
It wouldn't be honorable to send Ned and Robert.
Yeah.
Had Arryn just thought about the house words of the Arryns, he would have known that. Jon Arryn's first wife was a Royce, Jane Royce, and she died in childbirth. She delivered a stillborn daughter. His second wife was Rowena Arryn, his cousin, and she died of a winter chill, and they had no children either. So Jon Arryn has no wife. He has no children. He's a lonely dude. Through these Southern ambitions, through his relationship with Rickard Stark and Stephen Baratheon, both these boys are sent to the Eyrie to ward with Jon Arryn. For Ned, for Robert, we know that these are really the best years of their lives. They have a lot of fun. They become as close as brothers. And they look at Jon Arryn as a second father figure. And Jon Arryn has to. I mean, unless he's like a sociopath.
Because he has no sons. Right. And this is his only
chance.
He's
got nobody.
And it's probably the reason why they send him to Jon Arryn. Like, you're going to send him to Jon. Right. So Jon's, you know, he's a noble man. He knows about war. I mean, he's got no one. So it's good to send my son there.
He's a smart man, obviously. You know, he'll teach them. He'll take good care of them.
And for Rickard's stuff, you know, he's probably, we've talked about this, I think, months ago, I think we kind of talked about it when we were talking about the Stark kids and all. For Ned, there really wasn't much for him. I wouldn't focus on Brandon. Brandon, it was always meant for Brandon. I'm sure Rickard is kind of like more attention on Brandon than it is to Ned. So the best thing is to send Ned to some other guy that can give him more attention. They can give him some more nobility.
And who knows? Since he has, I mean, Albert Arryn is his heir, but who's to say that Ned can't rise high in the Vale and hold a keep in the Vale? You need to, as a noble lord, you need to make plans for all your kids or try and figure out something for them.
Right.
You don't want to just hang around the castle.
What they call like Lord Regent of the Vale. Right. Maybe not the Lord of the Vale, but Lord Regent of the Vale. I'm sure Southern ambition, that's, you know.
Yeah.
This is my game plan.
Starks are in the veil, baby.
Yes. Benjen, get ready.
Yeah. We're sending you to Dorne. It's how these High Lords develop relationships and intermingle with each other. The whole idea of the Southern Ambitions was thinking beyond your own lands, beyond the North, beyond the Vale, and starting relationships with these other powerful houses. So Jon Arryn, when he gets this letter, when he gets this raven demanding the heads of these two kids, it has to be a no-brainer. He had to have already heard what's happened at King's Landing. The word has to have reached the Vale. Has to have. I mean, do you think Jon Arryn was prepared for a letter like this, a raven like this?
He had to realize that, all right, after this, the whole entire realm, at least, is going to get some sort of, like, something from King's Landing. Right. Was he ready, you know, like, knowing that Jon Arryn is older, I'm sure he's got to understand, okay, just, like, the ways how things are in the realm, okay, he's going to want Robert and Eddard. I'm sure, I'm going to say yes. Yeah. I'm going to say he was probably expecting it, because...
Knowing who
Aerys is. Maybe not himself, but like, the king is definitely going to request me to send you guys down to King's Landing. In some fashion.
Well, I mean, Robert is already the Lord of Storm's End.
Why is he not in Storm's End?
That will never sit well with
me. Why is Ned...
Well, why is Ned in the Vale when his brother's getting married?
I guess they're all just waiting at the right time to all just meet up on, I guess, and Brandon going down south. I guess it was just... Well, maybe it was just a thing, okay, my brother's going down south, there's no marriage, stay where you are.
Yeah. Well, if you go back to that timeline we were talking about, when the marriage date is announced, it doesn't make sense. Because Rickard Stark got from Winterfell down to at least close enough to River Run where Brandon was able to meet him.
Because Ned gets married to Catelyn the same day that would have been Brandon got married to Catelyn.
Right.
So it all happens.
Again, everything happens so
quick. We want to talk about the timeline, and people want to, you know, talk about timelines and how nothing matches up.
There's
a history of timelines just...
somehow mashing together.
Somehow working out.
Right.
You know,
right.
For, you know, Ned to go get all these letters and form up what their plan is, then to go west to marry Catelyn Tully in the same time period that Brandon would have been marrying her on the same day. It really makes no sense that it should be. You would think, logically, with what was happening at King's Landing, that there would be a postponement to any marriage with Catelyn Tully. But there isn't. It happens on the same day.
Right. Like, even like a month later or something like that.
Like, we're holding off. Obviously, they still need to do the marriage because you really need Hosta Tully.
You have to have Hosta Tully.
Yeah. That's another walk. I'm not sure it's too early for a segue in the Hosta Tully right now. He's another guy.
Yeah.
Like Jon Arryn.
All four of these guys. Yeah, he's just as key to this whole thing. Not as much a mover or shaker, but a key ingredient to winning. And without him, probably you lose.
Hosta Tully's saying, listen, I'm marrying my daughter to a guy, to a son whose father just ran down and betrayed the king. And no way, you know, just in the War of the Five Kings, the key is the Riverlands.
Always.
Just, Paul Sertelli's size with the Targaryens, I don't see how they win that. And that's why it's paramount still to do the marriage, to have Eddard marry Catelyn to ensure it. But even before that, there's just no chance. If he comes out and supports the Targaryens, say, listen, Aerys, I'm sorry, you know, listen, I made a wedding pact with Rickard, he was obviously a traitor, he was a treasonous, his sons are going to be treasonous, as we've seen, I don't trust to marry my daughter to Eddard. I'm on your side. They're getting caught.
The Riverlands, where they're situated, the ease of access to everywhere else in the realm, and the military power of the Riverlands too, because House Tully is one of the seven major houses. But you also have the Freys, who, say what you will about Walder Frey or any Frey we've ever read about, but they have a lot of fucking big military power. And where they're situated, their keep is key to any.
Yeah, strategically, they're also very key, too.
Any house in the Riverlands, whenever there's a battle that breaks out, they're usually involved just because of their location. So any of these houses, they have a fairly strong military just because of history, because they have to. And Hosta Tully, as the overlord of that region, you don't have him, it's not much of a war at all. He was probably angry that Brandon ran off. Do you think he understood that Rickard went to answer the summons that Aerys sends him?
I would imagine, yeah.
They had some sort of relationship to the point where this marriage pact was made. So They had to have similar thinking, especially about the Mad King. And when he learns that Rickard dies, I would think that he's having the same thoughts as John Arryn, but not enough to start a rebellion. Like, he'll jump in and he'll join.
If someone's going to do it,
I'm with you.
What he did, what Mad King did, I'm on your side.
But I'm not starting anything because he's not going to be
the lead guy in this.
Think about the difference between the Eyrie and River Run. I mean, the Eyrie is impregnable. You could besiege the Eyrie, but you're not going to have much success. Whereas River Run is right there in the middle. He's going to have trouble come to him long before the Arryns get any trouble. And he has children. He has future generations to worry about. Two daughters.
Where John Arryn, all right.
Yeah, he's got the two boys who he has to protect, and he knows that Mad King wants their head, so it's easier for him to make a decision. Ned probably would have figured it out himself, but Ned hears from John Arryn that he should take Brandon's place to keep this marriage pact alive.
Like, Ned, we're going to need this. We want to win this.
You have to honor the pact for your father. I don't know that Hossa Tully would have, not that he would have sided against them, but I don't know that he would have sided with them if that marriage didn't occur. I don't think. And to sweeten the pot, John Arryn takes Lysa. And we know that Lysa is kind of, as far as nobility goes, she's damaged goods.
Those Tullys.
Yeah.
But again, like, you know, it's just like Hossa Tully, he had to be respected. It's funny how, like, his children are all dimbats.
Yeah, they really are.
But he and the Blackfish seem like...
Well, you know what? I can't say Catelyn's a dimbat. I just think Catelyn is unbelievably selfish.
Two of the three are dimbats. The other one is selfish and...
makes dumb decisions because she's only thinking of herself.
Right. She's got to mingle in everything or she should be mingling or always making the wrong choices. For the most part, always making the wrong choices. It's a podcast you should be doing pretty soon.
We definitely should. That's a prime one, I think.
It's a Catelyn Tully.
We've talked about her a lot.
We need a separate Catelyn Tully 10-parter, okay? It's going to be 10 parts.
We give her credit where credit's due when she does make a good decision or if she has done something smart. But whenever that happens, it's just surrounded by mind-boggling or war-altering, huge consequence decisions.
I always feel like the smart things that she does is when other people around her, aka Rob, make decisions, and we get her point of view, like, well, you should be doing that. But then she just goes around and makes even worse decisions her own self. You know what I'm saying? Like, she always seems like, you know, to be have like the right mindset to counter a bad one. But she can't make the right one when it's up on her, you know, when she's up the task, she can't make the right one.
Basically, when she's playing the role that she's supposed to play as a noble wife who isn't supposed to be making these big decisions, but offering counsel and comfort, she does fine.
For example, like, I'm sure it was in the book, but in the show, like, too, telling Rob, you know, if you do this, you have to win. Because if you don't win, you know what I did to the Targaryen children. We lose everything. But, like, Dash is trying to get, like, the right mindset.
Hammer it home, and she does a good job.
When the decision's up to her, when the light's on her, it just goes, everything that you could possibly do wrong, she does wrong.
She sees Tyrion, she tries to hide herself, good, but when she's noticed that she cannot think on her feet. But Hossa Tully doesn't seem like he's
like... No, he seems very capable, and again, you have to be capable
to rule the Riverlands,
because you probably have a lot of stuff bouncing off there. I like people to use you and try to use you. Any type of a command, he seems pretty with it to be that lord.
The Bracken and Blackwood relationship, just to keep the peace between those two houses after all the thousands of years of warring between them. You gotta be a wise man just to be able to do that. On top of ruling the Riverlands, Walder Frey always second-guessing you and poking at you, prodding at you. Hossa Tully has to be a strong man, he has to be a wise man to be able to do that successfully. And to have the foresight, he's not gonna join an effort that he knows is gonna be a losing effort. So he must have had the foresight that this would benefit him and his house in the long run. It should have. I guess it doesn't really after the events of A Song of Ice and Fire, but it should have because his one daughter would have been the Lady of Winterfell. His other daughter would have been the Lady of the Vale, and his son would have been the Lord of Riverrun. So things would have worked out for the Tullys. Mm-hmm. And that's what he sees when he makes this decision to keep with Jon Arryn and to keep with Ned Stark and to keep with Robert Baratheon. The numbers have to be another part because those three men are all lords of their respective kingdoms, the North, the Vale, and the Stormlands. Can you come up with a reason why Ned was in the Vale at that point in time and not going to the wedding?
I'm not saying I was right before, but I guess maybe at that point, was he trying to go there? Then all of a sudden, here's Brandon is going south, so...
The news would have reached him at the same time, right? The news that Lyanna was taken and Brandon went after. Because once Brandon gets it, he goes off. And news has to hit him before it hits the Vale, I would think. Although I'm sure that news spread quick.
Maybe it is once they get the news of Lyanna's kidnapping.
Alleged.
You make John Aaron says, okay, your sister just been taken. Robert's probably, you know, thrown a fit. Damn it, Ned, I told you about that Targaryen prince. We should have killed him, but, you know, I'm sure he's throwing a fit. You know what? I'm going to say John Aaron's probably telling Ned, stay here.
And Robert, too. Probably like, chill out. Let's see what's going on.
Bran's going down south. Okay. Stay here. You know, it's probably John Aaron. I don't think there's anything to confirm this. I'm just going to assume John Aaron's telling Ned to stay here.
Based on their characters, I'm sure he's telling the same thing to Robert. Once Robert hears...
That's the main guy. I'm sure Ned would be like, you're right, John.
Ned probably would have had the idea to like, all right, let's just see the lay of the land now.
Like, probably like, hold down and like, calm him down.
All right, lock Robert in his room. Pass him the note on the door telling him that Leanna was abducted.
Lock it up. Yeah. Bar it up. They didn't tell Robert right away. I don't know. Like, they tell Ned, listen... He can't tell Robert this. You know how he gets. And once again, I know I said it last week, and I forgot to look it up.
Oh, somebody
and
telling you, Brandon.
I thought I read. I'm going to read up on it again. I could have sworn, and again, I could be very wrong. I'm not saying that I was right on this, but I could have sworn. And maybe that was the same type of feeling. We don't know the full story yet.
Let's get the full story.
Stay here. Yeah. Get to the, oh shit, Brandon's going down south. You know, he's taking my nephew. You know, oh my God. Now it's really, you know, we can't react just yet. Then all of a sudden, Rickard goes there and then just a big cluster.
Let's talk for a minute about Brandon and about Robert because they are
the same type of person.
In regards to Lyanna's kidnapping and their reactions to it, Brandon gets word.
But Brandon doesn't have his father around.
He doesn't have any counsel whatsoever.
John Aaron's there to tell Robert.
And Ned's there too. And we know he's a pretty wise, patient man. He had to be pretty much the same as a younger man.
With Brandon, there's no one there.
No.
You got that emotion. You have that, I'm doing this for the sake of House Stark. I'm the heir. This is my responsibility now. Like that, I'm getting my sister back.
Rhaegar dishonored me. You're going to kill
and there's no one there.
Let's ride, boys.
That could. I mean, if Rickard was there, I'm sure, you know, Rickard, well, who knows?
Maybe he would have tried to, but I don't think he would have.
Maybe Rickard would have been, come on, so we're going. You know, like, no one is Rickard because he's just all over the place in all this. Yeah. It seems like, oh, like with his thinking and emotions and all like, you know, the ambitions and all that.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to get a read on Rickard. It really is.
But you would think he would at least attempt to tell Brandon, look what you're getting yourself into. There's no one there for that. John Aaron's there to get Ned and Robert.
Plus, they had the hindsight of Rickard and Brandon have been killed by the Mad King.
Right.
Shortly later,
I'm sure once Brandon's captured, I'm sure Robert's real. Okay, this is why John Aaron's like, this is why I told you this. Now we have to, you know, I'm sure John Aaron's already thinking, we better start planning something. If something goes wrong with Brandon, your father's coming down south. It's almost like a gossip. Everyone in the realm knows that Rickard's coming down, it seems. Like, you know, like, all these events, everyone knows they're moving south, you know. Like, this one's moving north. Yeah. So that everyone has to know that this is what's taking place. I'm sure already there's got to be some contingency plans. Some thinking, at least, on Jon Arryn's side. What can come from all this?
We just talked about Hossa Tully and how he was a good lord for the Riverlands. All of these lords are members of houses that have ruled these lands for thousands of years. And part of being a good lord is being able to consider different options and different possible outcomes. And I'm sure John Aaron, I'm sure Hossa Tully, I'm sure even Rickard Stark thought the possibility, the outside possibility, that if he goes to King's Landing, he's dead.
But he has to.
It's a king's demand. Well, he also thought that if I don't go, Brandon's dead. So I have to go. And right. I could probably save him.
He's thinking, if I don't save him, Brandon's 100% dead. If I do go down there, at least it's 50-50.
At least I have a chance. A fighting chance.
I have something, you know, there's a 50-50 chance, and I'm going to take that chance. Like, if you had a son,
you have to. You got to answer for it.
Zero chance or 50-50, you're going to take 50-50 chance to save him. You're not going to sit there, he's dead anyways. I'll just let him. Ned, get up north.
But Ned's a part of that, too. Rickard, I'm sure if he's thinking that, or if he kills Bran, if he kills me, Ned is up north. Vengeance up north. How Stark will go on, Ned will do the right thing. There is that sense of, all right, at the very least, in the worst possible case. But as far as Rickard Stark, what kind of conversation do you think he had with Hossa Tully in the decision to go and answer this summons? Well, pertaining basically to what happens if this happens, what happens if that happens.
Well, do you know they communicate that on this? Or
well, I think he reached Riverrun. I'm pretty sure that Rickard Stark got to Riverrun.
You would think he'd reach someplace he had to at least rest for a day.
When he got the summons, he had to have been at Riverrun. He had to have been. How does Aerys know he's at?
Well, because they're all going off the wedding.
Yeah, and Aerys had to have known. Aerys, at the very least, would have known about the wedding. So they would know that Rickard Stark
at River. And just a really flashback, that's how Rhaegar, you would think, knows where Lyanna is also.
Yes.
Flashback even more, where I think that Aerys was sending men up to get Lyanna. And that's what I think. Good old Westeros theory that he found that was that she was the Nine Laughing Tree. That they all know that the Starks are in that big marriage. But as you said last week, it's just funny how all the Starks are just everywhere. Rickard is in the north, marching south to the wedding. Brandon is in the Riverruns area. Lyanna is in the Riverruns area, but at a different place. They're all not. It's just like typical George Martin. He's like, you know.
Starks all over the place.
He starts all over the place. We got Baratheon and Bros who just are just all over the place with each other. And how he just. Mm-hmm. And then he makes his writing so well because you can sit here and talk about this stuff that there really is no structure. There's no. That's the word I'm looking for.
Cohesive
structure.
There's no like definitive narrative or timeline throughout these events because people are all over the place, and he's able to use that as plot devices, narrative devices to make other parts
just
work.
Just like using these guys as part of the puzzle, and I just give them last names. Oh, he's House Stark.
They've been talking about the Sons of the Dragon or Dance of the Dragons. Those timelines make more sense because he writes them like a history book. But getting these stories through the point of view of a character.
They're so lucid. They're so lucid.
Literally anything can happen at any moment, and it's believable because there's so many pieces in play all the time. All the time. So Jon Arryn's main motivation in going to war is what happened to Rickard and Brandon, his love for Ned and Robert, his honor, his obligation to protect them, because that's part of being a ward, is you protect your wards. That's what a wardship is. And the fact that if this happened to Rickard Stark, this could happen to me. Plus, Albert Arryn was killed at King's Landing. Maybe he doesn't know that at this point in time, but he knows that Albert Arryn rode with Brandon, so he's probably in trouble. And if Brandon and Rickard were dead, why would Albert Arryn still be alive? So he lost his heir. He's got all the reason in the world to rise up. He's got some reason to not, but he's got more.
More reason, more and more, and it's looking that the proper move here is to deny the Mad King his request.
Mm-hmm. Without Robert, without Jon, would Ned make the decision to rise up against Arryn? He doesn't know the full story about Rhaegar and Lyanna yet.
I don't think he would. I don't see them. It's tough to know because when we have Ned's point of view on things later on, we know that Ned knows the truth.
He has the
hindsight. So we don't have that emotion, Woody Woody. We know he knows. So to look back on it, we know that he wouldn't do it because it's easy to look in hindsight, you know, going through his eyes, that he wouldn't do it because he knows the truth. Because we don't have a POV thing where he's going through at the time it's happening.
So you're saying older Ned with the power of the hindsight, if he did not have Robert and Jon,
he wouldn't
convince him to go to war.
Plus the fact that we know older Ned knows the truth, he wouldn't do it.
All the horrible things that have happened because of going to war, he wouldn't. You're right, he wouldn't. But young Ned, I don't know. He's close to Lyanna. If he thought that Rhaegar had kidnapped Lyanna and his father and brother were killed, I think he would definitely leave Benjen at Winterfell with a plan that if I'm killed, you bend the knee. I'd have to go at least try and rescue Lyanna. The deal breaker is Arya's asks for his head. Arya wants to kill him anyway. So what does he have to lose?
You
know, at the end of the day, what does he have to lose? He's technically a dead man walking anyway. As far as Robert, luckily for Robert, Robert has a Ned and a Jon Arryn. They both are like, let's get the lay of the land first. Let's find out what's going on. Let's see what the Tullys are up to. If we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, but we need the North. We need the Stormlands. That's where they start this quickly, mind you, but that's where they do some planning to get the North and the Stormland forces involved. And that must have been the extent of the plan. Ned, you go to the North, rally the banners. Robert, you go to the Stormland, rally your banners. I'm going to rally my banners, and we're going to go, and we're just going to march.
We're going to meet in the middle. Which is funny in its own self for Robert the Two because he's really going past King's Landing.
Right.
It's actually a lot easier for Ned to go up north. He really doesn't have any.
Yes,
he does. He does. He doesn't know the side some of these guys are going
to
take.
They're labeled traitors to the crown immediately based on the circumstances, based on Rickard and Brandon, and based on Robert being betrothed to Lyanna and what's happened. They're just labeled as traitors. Once Jon Arryn raises his banners and does not send Arryn their heads, they're wanted men. It's not to the extent where there's a war raging yet. They're trying to rally sides to their cause. Do you have anything else to say about these guys? Jon Arryn, Robert Baratheon, Eddard Stark, Hoster Tully, as far as their thinking, motivations, where they are as the demand for Robert and Ned's heads is made to John Arryn.
No, I think the only thing else I think I'll left you for later stuff, I think, with the battle and all that. Ooh. So I don't want to waste that now.
I did want to say real quick, though, and I meant to say it before, is the echoing of Ned making a decision to go to war and march south for Lyanna, for Rickard, for his brother Brandon. And then Rob, all these years later, when Ned is imprisoned and falsely accused of something that he doesn't even know for sure whether or not Ned tried to put Stannis on the throne. He assumes not because he knows his father, but he could have stayed at Winterfell. He could have bent the knee and there would have been peace. But he makes the same decision essentially that Ned does. He calls the banners and he marches south.
He calls the banners because he was summoned again to bend the knee. Yeah. And he knows he's not going to bend the knee. Doesn't go down south. He probably has a feeling that, all right, they might be coming up north.
I'm sure those are things he was considering. At the end of the day, he does make the same decision that Ned makes, and he goes to war. He's not nearly as smart as Ned, and he's got his mother fucking shit up for him. Let's take a break there. When we get back, we're going to talk about the Loyalist side and the main players on the Loyalists, House Targaryen. We'll be right back.
The Princes That Were Promised
is an action-packed production.
Powered by Pinecast.
Subscribe to
The Princes That Were Promised
via
iTunes,
Stitcher,
Google Play Store,
and
thepromisedprinces.actionpackedpodcasts.com.
Send us a raven on Twitter at
Princes Promised.
Bend the knee on Facebook at facebook.com/thepromisedprinces. Read, enjoy, and learn from our scholarly essays at
ThePrincesThatWerePromised.com.
And thank you for listening. Welcome back. The Princes That Were Promised, the Wardens of Long Island. Open rebellion, warfare is almost upon Westeros. Loyalties are being established on the royal side of things, on the House Targaryen side of things. We have some major players. None of them quite so major as Ned or Robert or Jon, I guess with the exception of Rhaegar. And he's probably a good person to start with. We've spoken a lot about Rhaegar with our R plus L equals J, Tourney at Harrenhal. It's not necessary to cover all that, but it is Rhaegar's actions that start gears of war moving. He abducts Lyanna. You say at the end of the crossroads. I agree with that.
Around about that area.
It makes the most sense. It makes sense because Brandon's getting married at Riverrun, so Lyanna's
It's also, we talked about how things with Rock's fitting. It's also fitting that later on, it's Catelyn Tully's taking of Tyrion Lannister at the end of the crossroads that really starts that war up.
A lot of similarities.
Duality of both these wars started it at the end of the crossroads.
And the name itself of the end of the crossroads. Crossroads
and Oriens.
Ominous. Good point. Yeah, Lyanna gets abducted and then starts a war. Tyrion gets abducted and it starts a war. The difference being Catelyn abducted Tyrion.
Falsely. Stupidly.
Stupidly, falsely, but I'll say...
Just because he was a Lannister. I'm going to arrest any Lannister I possibly can because...
Somebody's got a pen.
Yeah.
But she did abduct him, whereas Lyanna was not abducted. But there's more to it. So let's start off with the idea that Rhaegar wasn't just going here to meet her, to run off with her. That actually fits a lot better, because I think when we spoke about...
He goes there with two Kingsguard members.
And which Kingsguard members does he have?
He's got the main guy himself, the best fighter in the realm, Arthur Dayne and Ozzel Wendt.
Right.
I'm sure Ozzel Wendt's also a very capable fighter also.
Well, he's got to be up there. Not Gerald Hightower, but... Probably the two best.
He's in the next Kingsguard. Two. I think Barris and Selmy's got to be in there in that session too.
And Lord Martell, I'm sure. I mean, they're technically the seven best knights.
Those one thing about Aerys, and we talk about Eddard talking about how they were the beacon of what the Kingsguard should be. It's very tough to distinguish all of them by bringing the BFF.
By bringing Arthur Dayne.
Bringing Arthur Dayne, you know he's coming in there with.
He's serious. He's got a mission, and it may get ugly. I was of the belief that he had set this rendezvous point with Lyanna to meet.
Which is also possible.
But this makes more sense. It does make a lot more sense because it adds to the urgency of getting to Lyanna and taking her away from danger.
Another reason why he wouldn't bring her to King's Landing. There's a couple reasons why he wouldn't. One of them, you don't want to bring her to King's Landing because, my wife's down there with my kids.
Right.
At the same time, he brings her down to a place in Dorne where my wife is from. So that kind of squashes that out. But again, the main reason could be because I can't bring her to King's Landing because my father wants her killed.
Let's start here. In Game of Thrones, season 7, we learn that Rhaegar had his marriage to Elia Martell annulled. We don't think this is happening in A Song of Ice and Fire. I don't think it's happening. I think it's going to be a case where Rhaegar takes a second wife.
I'm leaning more towards a second wife with the possibility.
I just feel like an annulment
is... Another time we'll talk more about this, maybe about the show and book. There could be very good possibilities that a lot of us are saying, well, that's not going to happen in books. We don't know that. And this may go back to what Dan Block says. We give George R. Martin too much credit. And I think maybe...
Sometimes
we give him too much credit. That maybe this stuff that is happening in the show that we're all saying, no, it's not going to happen that way. Maybe it is going to happen in the book.
Straight up, just the way it happens.
We don't know.
Well, my argument against annulment is it would be a slight against Elia Martell. It would be a slight against Dorne and House Martell and make an enemy of the Martells. So I don't think that it happened. And I think with the urgency that we're talking about.
In the show, how it happened was in secret, so maybe it doesn't even get out to the Martells. And that's.
In secret, like Elia doesn't even know?
That Elia doesn't even know. So she's still thinking that. Yeah.
I'm going to be a queen.
I'm still queen. My son is still the king. Okay. So bringing on the second wife, Ellie would have no problem with that. She'd be from Dorne. Not that she would have no problem with it, but it would be, all right, whatever.
At least I'm still queen.
I'm still queen, and my son still will have rights over her son.
Yes.
So, listen, it was an arranged marriage. Rhaegar, you know he's in prophecy. Maybe we will have something to do with it. I'm still kind of okay because my son is still higher rank. I'm not worried about it.
It's a slippery slope to get too deep into it because then we start talking about Rhaegar and his thoughts on Aegon with Elia versus Rhaegar and his thoughts on Aegon.
Those are too much of a prophecy. Right.
But I'm going to say that there's no annulment in A Song of Ice and Fire. It's a multiple wives situation. And I think it adds to the sense of urgency of everything that happens from when Rhaegar allegedly abducts Lyanna and runs off with her.
Ends the same way that...
It will end the same
way. John Aegon would be the Targaryen heir.
The sense of urgency, the fact that Rhaegar is trying to get to her before his father's
men get to her,
it goes a long way to explaining Rhaegar's lack of foresight in the actions that he's... and what he's doing. Because to me, and I'm sure to you also, Rhaegar Targaryen seems wiser than his father, more patient than his father. What we talked about before, consider multiple options, multiple outcomes... He seems better capable of doing those things than his father, and in general, a wise person who would make a good king.
Only problem with Rhaegar is he's just obsessed with that prophecy.
I think if he wasn't up against the clock, if he had thought about it a little bit, he had to have seen at least some of the repercussions that it would have if he ran off with Lyanna. What it would be looked at by some people. I mean, she's betrothed, for Christ's sake, to his cousin. He has to know what his cousin's like. He has to know what Brandon's like. Brandon had to be held back at the tourney at Harrenhal, right? When Rhaegar crowned Lyanna the Queen of Love and Beauty, Brandon had to be held back. There's no way that Rhaegar doesn't hear about that. So he has to know that he's going to make some people angry by taking Lyanna. So again, the fact that Aerys is sending men to take Lyanna does explain that it's like
if we go on that, if that is definitely true, not definitely, but if that's true, in a way it's not ironic. Yeah, it's seen as Rhaegar's taking her, but in a way, Rhaegar's taking her to save her.
Rhaegar's saving
her. Robert would be like, oh, thanks a lot, cousin, for saving my, but then it just falls. Everything falls flat in his face. Pretty much you get this 15-year-old at the time, she's 15.
Yeah, she's on the verge of 16. She had to be close to 16.
22, she's probably 15.
Not to bite off what Radio Westeros says about this, but what was Aerys
thinking? I'm just kind of liking that.
It makes sense that
Rhaegar will go out there try to save her.
It makes a lot of things make a lot more sense, to be honest with you.
Prince Charming going up there saving,
He has feelings for her. He loves her. That's why he's racing to go and save her, not thinking too much. Him going to her and taking her away, it gives it a heroic, romantic, positive feel to it. Instead of, he did this and it caused all these problems. There would have been problems anyway because Aerys would have taken her and then it would have been Brandon and Rickard and Lyanna that would kill the King's Landing. What is Aerys' reasoning for taking her? Wanting to take
the 9/11 tree because he wanted someone to get the 9/11 tree.
And he said that whoever would hide their face is an enemy to.
Yeah, he took that as like a slight. He's all not. If someone knows that it's Lyanna, someone's going to say something because everyone talks. So he gets right back. Oh, it's Lyanna. Get her because I want to kill that 9/11 tree.
Right.
Bring her down here, and you know what he's going to do. You put it down, he'll have her burned. I'm sure Rhaegar knows that. Maybe even, they were talking about it, oh, it was Lyanna, and that's right, Rhaegar just storms off and goes up there. But who knows where even Rhaegar is at the time. We just know that he's there.
Yeah.
But it just makes the most sense, I think.
It does.
Until proven otherwise, until there's more. Until there's a Winds of Winter, George, then we might have
something more. If he explains it in the Winds of Winter. Once Rhaegar catches up with Lyanna, he escapes with her to the Tower of Joy. And then Rhaegar is at the Tower of Joy.
With these two Kings Guard, they don't go. The Kings Guard do not leave. They stay, you know, they stay by their prince.
Until he goes off to war himself. And we'll get to those specifics. Not that we definitely have them, but we can go quite a ways in piecing together a timeline for Rhaegar at the Tower of Joy.
He's got to be there definitely enough time to, maybe if they go down, maybe before that they're getting married, or they have to get married first. Rhaegar's thought that it was very paramount that he has a legitimized baby with Lyanna.
Once he takes Lyanna, once he reaches the Tower of Joy, he has to hear what's going on with Brandon and with Rickard, right, and then with his father demanding the heads of Ned and Robert. What do you think is going on at the Tower of Joy when this happens? Do you think that he's telling Lyanna what's going on?
Yeah, I'm sure he has to.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm sure she, you know what, like, she gets a lot, especially now I've been noticing a lot of, like, you know, like, heat on Lyanna, like, her actions. And listen, she's, I don't think anyone could have realized in the Force I would think that her brother would go down south like that. Maybe she's not thinking that. I don't think she ever thought that these actions would lead to her father and brother being
killed. No, neither one of them thought that.
And that's what makes it so sad to me at the Tower. If you read all that stuff up at the Tower of Joy, so that she's, like, when she sees Eddard, she's just like,
thank God you're alive. Like, yeah, I'm so, like, sorry about all this.
I'm sure she's probably thinking, like, well, the girl, I'm sure she's probably like, oh shit, what's going on?
What have I done? Why all this trouble about me?
In the end, is it all worth it?
Well,
it's like with, it's like when Melisandre just tells to Stannis, you'll betray everyone you know, but in the end, it'll all be worth it.
For Stannis, it wasn't. It
wasn't for Stannis.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't. Maybe for the realm, it was, though.
Yeah.
It was worth Stannis betraying everybody knows. Listen, Rhaegar and Lyanna strike me as the type of people that they would want to make things right when they hear about everything that's going wrong. But what can they possibly do? Lyanna can't do anything because she's probably pregnant by this point in time. What can Rhaegar do?
He can't take Lyanna to King's Landing.
He can't ride off by himself. The King
is crazy. He'd be like, you know, oh, this is the reason for all this. She's dead.
Plus, Aerys believes that Rhaegar's out to get him. I don't know what he could have done. You can't blame him. If he had been quicker to the draw, maybe he could have been there earlier. They would have more success.
No, there's a lot of blame on him now. I'm seeing a lot of blame on him now. I'm just, you know, I feel like he basically cheated, threw his wife aside for all this, and he started everything, which I get, but I think just...
That wasn't his intention.
That is intention, but I think just in the end, no way is it all worth it. Well, if he knows about this war with the Dawn, I think it's worth it.
If Jon Snow saves humanity on Westeros...
Then it's definitely all worth it.
Going from Rhaegar, and we'll get to when Rhaegar enters the field.
You were just talking about the whole entire conversation he has with Jaime. We'll get on to.
Right. Aerys Targaryen, we talked a lot about last week, and the only new wrinkle that's kind of added to this is the idea that he was sending men after Lyanna. They're unsuccessful, and the next thing he knows, Brandon's outside the Red Keep yelling for Rhaegar, saying that Rhaegar ran off with Lyanna. Do you think he thinks then that Rhaegar did that to save Lyanna? Do you think he takes that as Rhaegar is against him?
I don't know, but he just takes it as if, okay, I love my son, he might have somebody after me, but this guy is asking for his head, which in a roundabout way, he's going after the Targaryens. Arrest this man.
At that point, it may still be a slight against House Targaryen. Don't take off the hand, lop off the whole head. Kill the offense before there's more. But Aerys at this point in time is not thinking war. I don't even think he's thinking of threats to his throne. I think he's just thinking of offenses made to him and making an example out of them. He's not thinking war at all. And if he had been, this could have gone a lot differently for him. And third person I want to talk about on the loyalist side of things, Varys, at this point in time, we know was in his ear. So what was Varys saying to him? Because we know Varys is a smart guy. Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones, Varys is a smart guy. Seems to know everything that's going on in the realm at once. He had to have seen the repercussions of every action that Aerys made. I get the vibe that Varys is driving the Targaryens to war with the rest of the realm.
I can definitely get the feeling he can definitely be saying, you know, all these people should be killed. Oh, man, he's turned some slights against you guys. You can't, you know, and it doesn't take much. Not too much for the Mad King to be like,
with long fingernails and unwashed hair, yeah.
And I was just really thinking right now. And I've always found it a little bit weird. I mean, I can understand it, but a little bit weird why Aerys was hellbent on getting Rhaegar up there to fight, to be the man to lead the fight against the rebellion. Why would you put your heir in harm's way like that? Now, obviously, there was definitely some tension
Protection.
Between.
Yeah, right. Okay, some tension. Yeah.
But
now
that I'm thinking about Varys, I can easily see seeing Varys whispering into Aerys' ear, Rhaegar should be leading this war. Because what's Varys' ultimate goal? Blackfyre. If I get Rhaegar killed,
there's no Targaryen heirs.
Then I know Targaryens. I go to the battle itself. Does he know that the Loyalists are going to flee once Rhaegar dies? Not sure, but I'm willing to take a risk. Aerys, send Rhaegar should be the one leading in this fight.
Let him prove his loyalty to you. And
twisting it, like, to make everything all, like, you know, cause it just seems weird. Like, I'm going to send my son out there.
And he's got another heir. He's got another baby on the way.
Yeah.
At this point in time, right? Daenerys is
well, in the womb, no, right? Well, not yet. Not yet. It happens.
He may not know that his wife is pregnant again. He may
he
not know.
He kind of rapes Rhaella the night that he conceives Daenerys. Isn't that after Rhaegar gets word of Rhaegar's getting being killed?
No, because he burned somebody alive, and like that's what got him lustful when he was burning people alive. But I'm trying to think who it was that he burned alive. I don't think it was Rickard.
Yeah, I thought it was when word got around that Rhaegar had died, but maybe it was before that.
No, it may very well have.
Daenerys was conceived during the last month of Robert's Rebellion.
Oh.
It was the last month of Robert's Rebellion. And so that places around the time that Rhaegar had died. Things were moved quite closely.
Well, point being, as far as Varys is concerned, there's Rhaegar and there's Viserys.
But if you can chop off one legit Targaryen, you know, one Targaryen,
We're basing this on the theory that Varys is not who he says he is, and that he's either a Blackfyre himself or he serves...
A supporter
of the Blackfyres. And we base that on A Dance with Dragons and him bringing Tyrion over to Illyrio Mopathis, and Illyrio Mopathis bringing him to Griffin Younggriff. Younggriff claiming to be Aegon Targaryen and us thinking that that's not true, that he's actually a fake Aegon. We put all these pieces together and it does look like Varys is a Blackfyre. That's who he's serving. That idea, going back to Robert's Rebellion, if he is a Blackfyre, surely the fall of that Targaryen line is his goal, and a realm-wide civil war could very well lead to that. So Varys could be the biggest mover and shaker of everybody. If he's lying to Aerys and if he's manipulating Aerys, we know that Aerys is really only at this point listening to Varys. He's not listening to anybody else. And no Targaryens would make it easier for him to bring in a Blackfyre, especially if he's able to disguise the Blackfyre as a Targaryen years down the road after another civil war.
Right.
It's a lot of planning, and there's no way Varys has it all planned out at this point in time, but...
How are they going to do it?
Yeah. It starts with...
And I think this kind of like even proves to the point is how can Varys and Illyrio have the foreshadowing, foresight to know that baby Aegon was going to get killed.
Right.
But that's the situation that they take as the way of doing all this.
Well, they have to know that the war is good for their cause.
And they'll figure out the pieces.
Chaos is a ladder.
Something from the end of this war, either the Targaryens, if they win, they'll be less in number. You know, there's something's going to come up out of all this.
Those are really the three main players on the Loyalist side.
The next line on the loyal side, like the general, so to speak. You have your John Connington.
And John Connington, some background on him, he's a homosexual. He's a gay man.
Who loves Rhaegar.
And he loves Rhaegar. Whether Rhaegar knows this, we don't know.
In John Connington's eyes, even my first time I read it, I thought that they were best friends.
Right.
But it's really...
I think Rhaegar thought they were best friends too, but in actuality...
No, but remember Rhaegar's best friend with the Ratchet, and Rhaegar's best friend with the
name. Right.
In John Connington's eyes, we're best friends. Meet him. Probably Rhaegar. I mean, Rhaegar was, you know, obviously he was probably a friend with him and all.
It wasn't like tight with him, though.
Sweet.
Right, no. He wasn't in the clique. He was like X-Pac.
But it wasn't Michael's and Nash type situation or a Hall and Nash type situation.
Yeah. But John Connington, his motivations is saving Rhaegar, is making sure that Rhaegar becomes king. He's dedicated to Rhaegar. And later on, when we see him in A Dance with Dragons, he's still dedicated to Rhaegar, putting who he thinks is Rhaegar's son on the Iron Throne for Rhaegar.
Fail the father, I shall not fail the son. Love that line.
That's a really good line. And
I would love to give that to Jaime Lannister next season. Fail the father.
I shall not fail the son.
In terms of John, that would be...
Perfectly fitting.
To use that line for Jaime. Because we know that Jaime respected and admired Rhaegar also.
So we also want to touch on Mace Tyrell, Randall Tarly, the Reach, and... This is probably the most powerful house that we know is loyal to the crown, because we don't know another major player being Tywin Lannister, but we don't know where he sits. He's not for the rebellion, but he's not speaking with Aerys. He's just upon himself in the Westerlands. That makes Mace Tyrell the most powerful lord loyal to the Iron Throne, because Highgarden is a very wealthy, very powerful house of Tyrells. And the reason the Tyrells are always going to be loyal to the Targaryens is because the Targaryens raised them up from stewards to House Gardener, who were the original Lords of the Reach upon Aegon's conquest. They raised the Tyrells up to Wardens of the South, Lords of the Reach. So the Trolls will always be loyal to Targaryens, and Randall Tarly will always be loyal to the Trolls. We'll talk about the Kingsguard, but as far as their motivations, I mean, they're the Kingsguard.
Yeah.
They all respect Rhaegar. Maybe they don't respect Aerys, but they swore an oath. Do you have anything else to add as far as motivations, where they are at the precipice of war for Aerys, Rhaegar, Varys, Jon Connington, any of these characters?
The only other wild card, it could be, you know, Dorne. What's Dorne going to do?
Let's take a break there, and when we come back, we'll talk about where everybody is as war is about to break out, and we'll be right back.
Born amidst salt and smoke, beneath a bleeding star, you are streaming The Princes That Were Promised, the podcast that tears Westeros apart and sifts through the pieces.
As war is about to break out across Westeros, the realm is pretty well divided. On the side of the rebels, on the side of, I would have to say, Jon Arryn at first. Although we know that Robert becomes the face of this war, preliminary stages, as lands are rallying to one side or the other.
How even Stannis was undecided.
Yeah, well, a lot of people weren't undecided, but the people early on that joined the cause, it'd be Jon Arryn's cause, because he's the first person to revolt, to raise the banners in rebellion against the throne. As that happens, the North, we know, will be with Eddard solid. I mean, no detractors. The entirety of the North will be behind this cause.
But they did it, Rickard and Brandon. They, you know.
Oh, dude, forget about it.
Winter is coming. Forget revenge. The North remembers.
The Stormlands, it's not as
kind of dry.
No, it's not. Part of that may be because the Stormlands are not technically a kingdom on themselves. They're not included in the Seven Kingdoms. They're more considered a part of the Crownlands. But there are people in the Stormlands loyal to House Baratheon. And House Baratheon is the overlord house of the Stormlands. But Robert's got some work to do down there to unite the entirety of the Stormlands behind him. But I would say for the most part, the Stormlands are on the side of the rebels. Kind of the same case in the Vale. Those houses really loyal to the Arryns, the Royces. I'm sure they're with him, but there are smaller houses that may look at this as an opportunity to be a bigger house if they side with Aerys and help him out. So the Vale's not cut and dry either. The Riverlands is the big question, and they side with the rebels. It's definitely based on Ned taking Brandon's place in the Stark-Tully marriage pact. But the relationship between Hoster and Jon Arryn also has to have something to do with it. Mm-hmm. And Hoster seeing what happened to Rickard, what could happen to Jon Arryn, and maybe he would be next if Aerys is going to go through all the lords of the Great Houses. That's pretty much the rebel side. The North, most of the Vale, most of the Stormlands, and most, if not all, of the Riverlands. Those loyal to the Crown, obviously the Crown lands, the lands surrounding the immediate area of King's Landing. The Reach, we talked about the Tyrells, how they'll always be loyal to the Targaryens. And Dorne. Dorne's always been a tricky kingdom for Westeros. Aegon wasn't able to conquer them. The Young Dragon was able to conquer them, but it blew up in his face. It was finally through a marriage pact that Dorne joined the Seven Kingdoms, and they were able to keep the style of Prince of Dorne. They were still able to consider themselves princes and princesses. So to say that Dorne is loyal to the Crown, loyal to House Targaryen, they're not really.
Really, it's
because of a couple things. Those being
Elliot Martell's in King's Landing,
right,
with the marriage pact. And the major thing is Aegon's dead. This is Dorne's king. This is now Aegon is a potential heir, and you want to keep that.
And his uncle is on the Kingsguard,
right?
Lewin Martell. So Dorne will be loyal to the Iron Throne. They will pitch in. They will help fight this war. But is it a war that the Dornish people can believe in? Not really, because if you think about the Dornish people, and I'm talking about, you know, the Ham and Eggers that will be marching off to war following whatever lord, Dorne isn't being attacked. What do they care about Aegon Targaryen? What do they care about Elia Martell? They care about Prince Dorne. They care about his brother Oberyn. They care about Lewin Martell, I'm sure, but he's serving in the Kingsguard.
Where was Oberyn during the rebellion? He didn't fight in it, right?
I don't believe that he fought in it, no.
So he's the youngest thing, because Dorne's got, you know, he's the prince. Ilya's probably the second oldest, right? Has to be, because he's got to be older than Oberyn, right?
They're very close in age. Doran, Moors, Olivar, I guess they're dead. Ilya, Oberyn. Oberyn is the youngest.
She's born 256 or 257.
At 282, she's like 26 years old. So she's even older than Rhaegar.
Yeah. And he's born 257 to 258. They're real close in age.
So he's at an age where he could be or should be fighting it then. It's not like he's like Benjen age where he's too young. Because I never recall reading him in the Rebellion.
It is currently unknown where Oberyn was during Robert's Rebellion, possibly having remained in Dorne or been serving at Essos in a free company. I think that more likely. I don't think he would have stayed in Dorne.
No, especially knowing that his sister could be in trouble.
He would have been...
He's in Essos. Yeah. I'm going to say he's in Essos.
I would agree with that. Can't confirm it, but I would say all signs point to
Oberyn. The meter is going more towards Essos.
Yeah, the Essos meter is going off. But the Dornish people themselves, the military power of Dorne, the people in the north, they can get behind the Starks, they can get behind Rickard dying, and they fight this war because they believe it's right. But do the people of Dorne believe this war is right? They know that they have to do it. When you have guys on one side fighting for something they believe in and guys on the other side fighting because their lords are making them.
Right. Well, as Robert said in season one, what's the bigger army? The side that is fighting...
As one.
As one. Okay. At 500,000.
Yeah.
And I guess Prince Dorne, he has to ride them up and say, listen, my sister's over there. You have to fight for that side because that side loses, Ellie is dead.
Well, here's the other problem. I doubt that Dorne thought there was any danger for her because Arya's didn't think there was any
danger. No one thought there was any danger until...
I
don't think Rhaegar knew there was any danger for his kids. I don't think he wanted his children to die. Going off Lyanna is one thing. He didn't want like anything to happen to Ellie.
No, obviously not. But
his children.
He couldn't possibly thought that anything would. Until it was too late. I guess it was mostly Dornish that followed Rhaegar into the field, but at that point, that was like really the last battle. Most of the war had been won already. And we're going to get into that. We're going to go through every battle in Robert's Rebellion / the War of the Usurper. It's only called the War of the Usurper by people like Viserys. While it was breaking out...
I love Viserys. I love him. Top 10 character, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Love him.
Wow.
I just like... He's just a nut.
Yeah, he's a nut job.
But he's borderline top 10. There's probably other characters in. But yeah, there's probably more. But he's definitely...
Possible top 10.
Yeah. There's a top 12. He might be more of a top 12. Being like that 12 area. Yeah. Wish he lived.
Yeah.
Would have liked to have more from him. At least more from him. When you read about him, like in the first book, it's kind of like you know, like, you get the feeling.
He's doomed.
He's doomed. But I enjoyed him so much, I just like, I just wanted more of him.
How old is Viserys as this breaks out? What is he like?
He's 5 years old at this point.
Definitely five?
Around five. There was a big age difference. Because Rhaegar is like 20, at this point he's like 22, 23. And Viserys is like, you know, like 5 years old.
So it's no wonder he has such hard feeling. I mean, he's going to because his father and his brother were killed.
Right. And I'm sure like he's at that time as, you know, a five-year-old kid. Yeah, that's when he's starting to get wowed by things. Kids these days, like Frank's starting to get wowed by toys and all this. You know, Viserys is getting wowed by his brother. He's getting, you know, everyone talks so highly of Rhaegar and he sees his brother in this. This is, you know, this is what you should be.
Nobody can beat my brother in the field. Yeah. Nobody. My brother's the greatest swordsman. My brother gets all the ladies, got a beautiful wife. And then to hear that he's been killed on the Trident and you have to flee from King's Landing from the Red Keep. You're not an heir to the throne anymore. Your father's dead. To hear all these things, of course it became bitter.
I'm going to bring something up here right now again. Whose instructions was it for? Was it against the Mad King to have Rhaella flee the Red Keep? Could it be whispered by Varys once again getting...
Possible?
Some of the possibilities. Another possible whisper.
But the thing is, I would think if Varys is doing what we think he is, I would think that he wants all of them at the Red Keep to eliminate all of them. Because Viserys, he doesn't know if Dany's going to be a boy or a girl, right? If it's another boy,
right?
That's danger. That's danger to him. Hell, it may have been Varys who arranged for Willem Dary to usher them from Dragonstone to Pentos. That may have been Varys. We don't know. Maybe Varys views them as a danger, but needs to keep them alive for a bigger plan. Brings them to Pentos, to Lyra Mopatis. He has them well in hand. He has control of them. It helps him form the rest of his plan. I don't know. It could go either way. And we'll definitely discuss that. We got a lot to discuss with this war. We went through all the main characters, went through all the main players, went through all the different realms of Westeros and what side they'll be taking. We'll talk to you next week with the outbreak of war for Robert's Rebellion. Bum, 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 bum